up, everybody, and welcome to Declarations of War, now broadcasting live on Twitch. Bear with us if it explodes. I am your host, Alexiv Carr, joined by my co-host, Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
We are yinless this weekend, as he has not shown up for the recording. Shame, shame, shame. Our special guest, his new CSM co-member, Yukiko Kami, the newly elected representative from Brave Newbies.
Hello, everyone.
And hello to you. Thank you for joining us. First off, I want to give some shout-outs. Akula, Rigger, and Alphon Dorn, three old-school Noir pilots who have resubbed to the game and joined the Capitalist Army. Very excited to have them with us. We are going to kill many people together.
And my shout-out is to Jintan for not showing up today and allowing me to have a proper intro to the show.
Figured it was bound to happen one of these days, right?
Indeed.
Yukiko?
Yeah, first shout out obviously to all the CSM voters that for some reason or the other put me on their list. And then a special shout out to Kinera Anurin, our military director, who wanted to greet you two and Jin.
Alrighty. And we are out of the CSM elections now, so we actually have some advertising space on Declarations of War. If you're going to get the word out for your corp, your service, website, in-game or out-of-game products, contact me in Eve, Alexeyev Card. You can also reach me on Reddit, Alexeyev, Twitter, GRRUSSO, and we'll start talking, come up with a price. We're not going to do Plex anymore because Plexes are about to get changed. So I'm thinking about 500 mil a show, basically. It's a pretty good deal considering the reach that we have. So if you're trying to get the word out, this is a good way to do it. Let's jump right into the poll. We had a question, warp to the sun, star, or thingy? And as I predicted, it's warp to the sun. I don't know why this is even a question. Artemis.
I mean, thingy is just the obvious answer here.
Yeah, I agree. Thingy must be the thing.
It did get some votes. No one voted for Star. So I forget whether that was you or Yin making the point that, oh, we should call them Stars now. Nah, it's just warp to the sun.
I heard Star before in a fleet, but it's rare.
I've been playing you for 10 years. I've never, ever heard it.
I mean,
it's a line to the sun, warp to the sun. He's warped to the sun. I'm at the sun. No one's ever called it a star in my presence this entire time.
I think I had one FC that called it a star, and everyone was pretty confused as to where to align to.
Okay. Leading into our top stories, Yukiko, thank you for joining us. This is probably going to be the first time a lot of my listeners have heard from you. We tried to get you in on the Declarations of War candidate roundtables, just unfortunately the schedules could not align, but I was very impressed with your candidacy, and I'm really glad that you're here with us today.
Thank you very much. I mean, I'm surprised that you were so happy about my candidacy, or I mean the way I did it, because basically there was none, which I'm well aware of, so it's very surprising I got on, actually.
Well, so the way that I prep for those shows is I go through all the candidates, literally go through every name after the official list is put out. I don't screen before that list because I've been burned too many times with candidates that said that they were going to run and were like, oh, I want to be on the show. And then I was like, all right, and I make plans for them to come on. And then sure enough, there's some issue with their application or they withdraw or something like that, at which point, you know, I'm holding the bag because those spots could have gone to other people. So now I don't even bother bringing on CSM folks that are running unless they're incumbents until the actual list is out, because you never know who's going to cancel, who's going to have a passport issue, whatever.
Yeah, it makes sense. So
I go through all the names and I take a look at their pitch. I take a look at their background, their alliances. And then I sort of make a judgment call on whether or not they're a credible candidate. If you didn't fill out your bio or your website, I probably didn't pick you. If you said some crazy crackpot things like, oh, I'm going to get CCP to like 10x mining income, well, I'm probably not going to talk to you. If you go, oh, I'm running because the CSM is just controlled by NullSec cartels and I'm going to show everybody that the CSM is this and it's that, probably not going to talk to you. But, you know, through going through that process, I do pick out a pool of a pretty large pool of decent candidates, and then I mail them out and see who can come on. And what caught my eye with you is you seem to be the most articulate, grounded new player representative candidate that was running this time around.
I mean, that's what I aim for, and actually that is why people in Brave asked me to step up and do it.
So let's talk about, well, yeah, let's talk about that process, and then we'll get into your background as a person. Like, how does the Brave candidacy thing work? Because you guys are large enough that you've been able to elect several candidates now just through either your alliance or the larger blocks that you're affiliated with. Is there an internal primary? Is it something that leadership decides? How does that work?
I mean, I'm in leadership, so I can also say it from that side. There is no process at all. I mean, it was not planned that we have a candidate, and it was more like I expected Dunk Dinkel to step up because he's well known and he's around, and it was talked about that he should step up a couple of times, but he never did. Didn't do it this time, and somehow people pointed at me and I was like, I have no clue if that is a good idea because no one knows me. And I don't know if someone would vote for me, but I would be up to it in general. And yeah, so we had a quick chat with a couple of people seeing if I don't step on anyone's toes. And that was pretty much it.
All right, now let's talk about your Eve career. And then we're going to transition into the CSM in general and sort of your hopes for the future. Actually, before we even get into that, one thing I would like to know is, what did you do for campaigning? Was it just internal, or did you also go elsewhere, try to get more folks involved? What other ballots were you on, that kind of thing? And then I want to ask you how you started playing.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I did an AMA on Reddit and put my candidacy on the Eve Online forums, but that was pretty much all of it. Like, I didn't have a specific website for the candidacy or anything. I did an AMA in our internal forums just as a separate thing. But all in all, I didn't do much, didn't run any ads or something, but it was pretty late already. I mean, by the time I stepped up, everyone else was already running ads and was probably featured in some podcast or two. So I was late to the show. Apart from that, let me think, what did I do? You asked the second question, but I don't remember.
No, that's all right. No, that's pretty much what I wanted to know. So it sounds like, oh, what other ballots were you on? Did you have exactly partnerships with any other candidates?
So, yeah, I mean, Kigali and our diplomats did some things, and I'm known in a few circles, so I ended up on a couple of ballots, which I think made this run successful. So finally, I was on the Pandemic Horde ballot, as far as I know, on the Goon ballot at some point, and the CO2 and test ballot, I think, as well.
Oh, yeah, that's, well, quite if you're on the CO2 and test ballot, that's probably where the bulk of your votes came from. I'm sure we're going to get a list of the raw votes pretty soon, and that'll enable us to do a kind of like an election post-mortem. Figure out who got eliminated when, where people's support came from. It's been kind of an electoral tradition with the CSM for a while now, and always a good time. Shout out to the bloggers who do a really good job analyzing that kind of thing. Particularly yes. Nosy, he does a great job.
It's pretty interesting to see how that works.
Yeah. So let's talk about the past. You're never heard of EVE Online. How do you hear about it first? What gets you in? What gets you hooked?
Well, I played online role-playing games since ages, pretty much. I tried almost any big game that came out at some point or the other. And I stumbled upon EVE in 2009. And just thought, okay, let's try this, because science fiction MMOs are pretty rare. I mean, there are a few by now, but back then it was still like there were two or three, but nothing really big and great. So I started EVE and was intrigued by the complexity, but at the same time, it was pretty hard in the beginning, to be fair.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, I have to think. I guess I played about a year, maybe two. I was in a couple of high-sec corps. It was quite fun, actually, back then. We had some Vortex going, so that was quite interesting. But at some point, I didn't have the time to do it anymore, so I stopped. And then didn't think about it for a couple of years, but always it came always back to my mind, like, you should restart this if you have time, which happened. But at that time, I had some friends playing with me, so we just did high sec mission running. Pretty boring. So that stopped after, I don't know, half a year or something, because too boring.
Yeah.
Definitely too boring. And then, again, no time, until 1.5 years ago, October-ish, 2015, I thought, now is the time to restart this and really do it, like really do it. So I restarted and looked out for an alliance that was, like, not too big, so you have a chance to, you know, connect to some people. But on the other hand, international and big enough to be in NullSec and do things. And yeah, I don't know. For some reason, that was Brave at that time, which was actually not even in Null, but in Faction Warfare, but had the idea to go back to Null. So yeah, I joined Brave in Faction Warfare and stayed with them ever after since then.
Nice.
So, in the timeline of Brave history, is this after the coups and the numerous quick succession of restaging efforts, or is this during their heyday, if you will?
Yes, which eviction effort did you join prior to?
No, I think I missed all the really bad ones. Faction Warfare was... I don't even know. I guess after Balagut or after the last catch time. I don't know. I mean, we were evicted from Fade afterwards last year, but I think the really bad coups and everything was before my time.
Gotcha.
Catch people up on what Brave is up to now. We know you're down in the south. Are you guys happy with the, I think it's about half a region that you have, or a quarter of a region? Is that turning out to be enough space for an alliance your size under the current system? And who are your sort of prime hostiles right now? I know you're part of a Circle of Test coalition. They're fighting goons. Are you guys involved with that? Are you guys looking at other places?
No, I mean, we are officially in the... I mean, I saw the name Legacy Alliance somewhere, Legacy Coalition. So apparently we are somewhere in there. I mean, I feel it's pretty good. We were not sure how much content there will be, but there is definitely enough. We have frequent fleets passing by our home system. Goons are always a threat. We had this wonderful fight around the Fortiza on Friday. That was quite fun. And
with goons, or?
Yeah, with goons. They attacked a CO2 Fortiza.
And oh, we have a thing about that later.
Oh yeah, right. Good point. Well,
yeah, and by all means, take the lead on that, since you've been like a frontline war correspondent with that one.
yeah, that was fun, but more on that later. Yeah, and then there is Provi around the corner, so we can always roam over to Provi, Stain. So there's lots of options. It's quite fun so far.
Great, it's good to see you guys back on the 00 horse.
Yeah, I mean we are for some time now, but it was stony road, let's say. But now it feels pretty good.
Speaking of feeling pretty good, you were announced live on the stage of FanFest as part of the 12th Council of Stellar Management. And we're going to go over the other winners before we really dig into the meat of FanFest and everything that came with that. Being re-elected, Steve Ronikin from Fuzzworks. He is the HiSec rep and also the third-party API tool rep and also the mining rep. He's wearing a lot of hats, this council. We've got Reload, Farron Drake from Turn Left, representing LowSec and Dank Memes. The Judge being re-elected from Circle of Two. Noobman, representing Wormholes from Hard Knock Citizens. Yen Tan, our boy, re-elected from CVA. Innominate and Suetonia and Aerith from Goonswarm. Now, Innominate and Aerith are the main reps for Goonswarm. Suetonia was not their top dude. He ran more of an independent campaign as a balance candidate because of his, I mean, he's done incredible work with both on the Eve video content side and in terms of advocacy for, you know, which ships are strong, which ships are not strong, which ones are, you know, really throwing the balance of the game off and how to fix them. He's done tremendous work there. So it's really great to see him and Reload on the same council. I'd like to call this the balance CSM. So I don't think we've ever had two people on the council at the same time with such a high degree of familiarity with Eve ship fittings. Unless Elise and Gorski had a term together, but I don't think that they did. But anyway, the ring balance to the force, which is going to be awesome. We've also got Vince Draken, the executor of Northern Coalition, pretty much the leader of that whole coalition. Not just the Alliance, but the wider coalition that they're part of. Really interesting to see him on the council. He's like a sort of a counterweight to the Mitanni these days, or pretty close to it. So he's a huge, massive leader, a leader of a huge, massive block of players with all the experience of organization and diplomacy and delegation and managing players at that level and scale that comes with it, which I think is a good perspective to have on the CSM at that really high macro level in balance with the really micro level of a Suetonia, of a Reload. You know, you kind of get that balance. And then even in the middle there with Yin, I feel like there's a very key representation there, a lot of great points of view getting represented. We also got the new player rep of Yukiko, and that rounds out the 10-man council, smaller than ever before.
That's true.
Yukiko, how do you feel about that smaller council size? You know, we went from, what was it, 14 down to 10.
I mean, I think it's okay. It's still pretty mixed, as you pointed out. I think it's well enough for discussing things, and might be even easier to come to conclusions with 10 people than 14.
Definitely, if you guys plan on doing consensus style CSMing, then that'd be
yeah, I don't
really
know
hard
that.
To do with 14 people. Yeah, I can tell you from experience.
Yeah, I know that as well. But still, even if not consensus, I mean, getting into some direction that is acceptable for all is still easier.
So let's go into the new CSM. I would love to hear your perspective on how the council is shaped out in general. Anyone in particular really excited that got on? What issues are you looking at as sort of your first things to tackle when you come in?
I said before on my AMA that I don't want to run on any specific campaign or direction, because I think it's a moot point without knowing what CCP is planning to do. So I mainly want to see what is happening and try to involve people in as much as I can in whatever the direction is that CCP is taking. But obviously, as someone in a newbie alliance, I will have a look at the new player experience in a wider sense, like not only what happens to newer players, how can they be involved, but also how can their actual start in the game be made easier one way or the other.
And what about other people in the council? Anyone you're really psyched to work with?
I mean, there are a couple of people. I think Steve is pretty interesting in that he is very deeply into all the API stuff and is pretty much the lone high-sec person, which is pretty important because there's lots of complaints from that side that there's not enough representation. So I'm definitely looking in that direction. As I said, I have been in high-sec corps way back then, and I think it's a different lifestyle, but it's a lifestyle, a playstyle. So I think it's okay to look for that. And then, I mean, we have a wormhole candidate. That's good. Also looking forward to what is coming from that side, because wormholes is one of the things I don't have much experience in.
Mm-hmm.
And then after all, working with Jin is probably good.
Probably good. He's all right.
I don't know.
I don't know. You know, he's not here, so that shows lack of, you know.
So
we are talking about this show live on Twitch. If anyone in the Twitch chat has questions for Yukiko or questions about any of the topics we're talking about, we can get into them at the end of the show. Just drop them in the chat. Sorry, Artemis, you had something?
I was just going to say we were talking before the show, and the topic of heights came up, and the discussion of whether Jin Tan or Yukiko will take the award for shortest CSM member.
Are you asking which of them is going to measure up?
Possibly.
In a way, yeah.
Well, you can go regardless of how that question shakes out. I just want to remind you to stand tall.
I'm doing that all the time. That is no question. With my size, you have to do that. Otherwise, you are not seen.
Okay, so speaking of FanFest, we had a whole bunch of things drop. Not as many as in past years, because CCP is now making the habit of putting out their big announcements just prior to FanFest, so they can use the FanFest opportunity of talking with a lot of the players to get feedback on what those things are. So the big announcement was the refineries and the drilling platforms, and that happened before FanFest even went down. But there were still some interesting things that came out in FanFest proper. Specifically, faction citadels, that may have been discussed or at least hinted at outside of the FanFest context, but was definitely news to me in terms of how they were going to work exactly. And how that's going to work is all existing outposts in the game are going to be converted into faction citadels based on their type. And this includes conquerable stations. Conquerable stations are going to be like super fortizars. Well, they're all going to be super fortizars, but the conquerable stations are going to be even more super fortizars. And then each of the racial stations will be fortizars with manufacturing, refining, research, and science, and just a general services bonus, depending on which race it is. I am pretty excited for this. I think that the way this is going to shake out, and Artemis, you can double check my theory crafting here, but they're going to be so valuable and so rare in that there's only going to be, 100 something of them ever in the game? Right. I'm not sure how many outposts. So yeah, probably more than 100. A couple hundred.
I think I had 85 earlier at some point.
How many?
85.
Number's a little bit low.
You think we're at thousands of outposts? Maybe we are.
I don't think we're at thousands.
I don't think we're at thousands. We'll say a couple hundred. Anyway, there's a pretty small number, and if you've upgraded said outpost, it's going to get a special rig, which will be like a super powered rig that you can then rig on top of as well. So they're going to be really OP.
As I understand it, the rigs are going to be pre-fitted, right? So as soon as the patch hits and the outposts disappear, the Fortizar, which is placed in their spot, online, it's going to have fuel, so all of its service modules will be able to run for a week or a month or whatever CCP decides on. It's going to be pre-fit with a special rig that will never be produced again, but the deal is CCP wants to incentivize people to leave these Fortizars where they are, in the place where the old outposts were. And so this rig will combine a bunch of the functions which the previous outposts did and generically just make them better than even other faction citadels would be if you were, for example, to take down this Fortizar and place it back up somewhere else. This special one-time use rig would be destroyed and you would lose out on those bonuses.
So my thinking is, they haven't announced the date, but I gotta imagine as the time gets closer, we are gonna see some warfare around this particular feature. Because these citadels are going to be so valuable and so awesome. People will want to capture as much space as they can in terms of outposts, just so that they can have more of these faction citadels. They're going to be quite valuable.
Indeed.
It could be some interesting times, a big content driver, you know, one-time content driving event, but still, I wouldn't be surprised if we see at least one alliance make a push to greatly expand their territory, if not many alliances make pushes to expand their territory and absorb as many outpost systems as they can till the patch day, at which point they could then take all the outposts down, which are now these faction citadels, and then, you know, recover to their regular territory, and then they can sell these things at a vastly, vastly, vastly overcharged price.
Yeah, that will be pretty interesting. I bet there will be a lot of fighting over those stations beforehand.
I wish Jin was here, because there's been a lot of speculation about Pravi just getting steamrolled for the sole purpose of taking all of these faction citadels.
Yeah, they have it so could many be. Of them.
It would be,
I mean, that would be very bad manners, but I could see it.
I mean, it happened when Aegisov dropped, didn't it? Or at least they didn't get rolled, but people headed out there to play around with the new system, see how mechanics would shake out. Alliances quite often just head over to Pravi for the sake of having some good fights every once in a while, so I wouldn't be surprised if at least a few entities try it. I'm personally interested in how the drone regions are going to shake out. It seems to me that those may be relatively easy pickings for some smaller entities who aren't perhaps tied to a particular area of Sov elsewhere. So, I mean, obviously you've got your bigger entities, your Goon Swarm, your Circle of Tests, NCPL, what have you. But because they are Sov-holding alliances as they are, with a few exceptions, they're going to be tied down, relatively speaking. So I'm interested to see who's going to pop up and who's going to take some of these systems, which are otherwise inaccessible or at least inconvenient to travel to for otherwise established alliances.
The thing with the drone regions ones, they are inconvenient to travel to, but that also means they're inconvenient to attack. And their ADMs are not bad. I took a look the other night because I had the same thought that you did. But actually the ADMs for the outpost systems they're not bad. I actually think some alliances in more accessible space that are taking more space than they can realistically hold are going to find themselves stretched pretty thin, like the FCONs of the world. You know, they've got a lot of systems with outposts in them that are not high ADM. They're not the most, you know, they'll turn up, they'll fight, but they're not the most, like, militarily competent alliances. They're not, like, Pandemic Legion level. They don't have the huge supercap fleet. They don't have a big superpower backing them. There are a lot of alliances that are out there like that right now. And some of them, like I would point to FCON, are holding large amounts of territory. And we're talking multiple constellations. And they could run into some trouble, especially if they get attacked at multiple points by multiple people.
It'll be interesting to see how the strain plays out on the existing alliances and coalitions, or, yeah, coalitions is the time I'm looking for, how the added cost and benefit of, do I go defend this EFCON, if you will, if they're part of the Legacy Coalition? They're at least semi-related, are they not? I know they work together when Circle of Test invaded Catch. In any case,
I thought they were in their own coalition. Yukiko, who's EFCON with right now?
I think they are on their own, pretty much. I mean, they are loosely aligned, but I think they are on their own.
Interesting. Well, then, my point is somewhat moot. However, certainly in other cases, it'll be interesting to see if these alliances, or rather, if these coalitions will hold up if you've got large entities attacking outpost systems, and perhaps someone asks for aid.
Yeah.
Or more interestingly, what if these coalitions break down because one side wants more outposts than the other side? You know, like, oh, we have these renners or these small guys. We gave them 5 outposts. Mm-hmm. If each of those outposts is now worth several hundred billion ISK, who's to say their bigger brothers don't go, we want that space back for a bit, or at least the outpost part of it. Yeah, we'll mechanics. Give you regular Fortizars after. And will those guys be okay with that? That'll be interesting to see.
The mechanics themselves I'm a bit interested in, because the citadels as they exist now are particularly tied to corporations, but outposts as a function of the solve system are tied more to alliances than corporations? Or am I misspeaking here?
The outposts are still owned by a corporation.
They are. Okay. So then we'll just default to that corporation. It'll be interesting to see, because Rate My Ticks is the one on the top of my head of a renter alliance, if you will, with many corporations within it. And so it'd be interesting to see if perhaps just all of a sudden corporations or the ownership of all of those outposts is taken over.
That's an interesting point.
Between corporations.
Yeah, and this kind of alliance, that could pretty easily happen.
It's going to be exciting times. And let's talk about a timeline for all this. It looks like not only are outposts going away, but POS is also going away sometime this winter. So they weren't explicit that it would be by the end of the year, but they did say by the end of the winter after the big patch. So there's going to be a winter update that's usually the middle of December, like the second or third week. And they said sometime after that, in the wintertime, POSs and outposts are going to go away and go through this conversion process. I think POSs are going to be refunded, and outposts and conquerable stations are going to be converted over to citadels. So to me, that probably means sometime after New Year's. I think that's where we're going to see it. I don't think they're going to do anything that drastic during Christmas. So whenever CCP's winter holiday vacations are over, that's probably when we're going to see it.
That sounds about right.
I can't wait. That's interesting stuff. It's very interesting. I am pleased with how they've handled it, because those outposts are a big investment, yes. But you're going to be getting something of unique value. And, you know, they have to go away at some point. So if you're going to go, this is kind of the way to go. I'm wondering personally if my own corp will be able to get involved in any of this fun stuff. Unclear what the future will hold, but it does sound like very compelling content. So maybe we'll do something or other.
I will say, if your corporation is looking at maybe acquiring one of these, perhaps on the cheap, depending on how you speculate their prices will spike as soon as the patch hits, then Mercenary Coalition, an army at your will for a small fee.
Indeed. Personally, I plan on paying the iron price, because I am too cheap to afford MC at the moment. Someday. No, I'm currently grinding money for Theo Maki. We're going to hopefully sponsor that event. And It's kind of putting a crimp on the finances at the moment to make sure that that goes off without a hitch. But at some point, once I get my marketing and my production up and running, we're going to be more in MC territory again. And then we'll see. Then we shall see. Or we could just do it on our own. I mean, it kind of depends on how big the corp will be at that point. I think to take a Saab system, minimum you're going to need about 4 people in fleet. So,
I mean, if it's undefended, it's pretty okay with a small number of people.
Yeah, but you still need to do enough to get through the passive regen. Unless CCP, please fucking God, CCP, change the age of Saab system so that the nodes do not tick for the defender if someone is intosising the system.
No.
I do not understand why this is a thing. If it's the whole point of it is so that the defender does not get trolled by attackers that don't show up. But if the attacker shows up, the defensive advantage should stop. In terms of the timers, they shouldn't automatically regenerate. If an attacker shows up, you should have to show up to counter them. That seems to be the whole point of the system. I do not understand why it remains in the state that it is. It's very disconcerting.
No, it's kind of
true.
In the
core spaghetti code.
Yeah, probably.
I can't say pause code anymore. What's going to be when pauses go away? Speculation time. Put on your tinfoil hats, boys. What's going to be the go-to scapegoat for why changes cannot be implemented?
Oh, obviously alliance and cooperation code.
Yep, that is the next one.
This
alliance and core code is a fucking mess.
Yeah, this interface is so horrible.
And after that, it'll be the physics engine, probably.
Yeah, sounds good.
But, yeah, the corp code will take about a year or two, maybe even 3 years to get going properly.
I mean, especially if actually something in the direction of coalitions as a game mechanic should happen.
Well, I don't think forget about coalition level tools. Let's just get some alliance level tools first, please.
Yeah, it would be perfect. But I heard people talking about wanting to have something in game that represents a coalition, an alliance of alliances or whatever.
Speaking of tools and circling back to FanFest, I was somewhat hoping that we would see some display or panel or mentions of some sort about the new forums, which we saw mentioned in the CSM minutes. I was hoping we could get a bit more info on that and the changes CCP is looking at making. And a couple of other things that popped up in the minutes but did not make their way into the FanFest agenda. Anything else that you guys were hoping to see mentioned at FanFest in a bit more depth that you didn't quite see?
I didn't think we would see it because the new structures just came out, but every FanFest I keep on hoping we hear about the next, not any details necessarily, but some kind of scope of where the next structures are going to be. Stargates are the end goal, but there's also a whole bunch of stuff that was talked about in between. In particular, I'm always hoping to hear more about these surveillance arrays. But otherwise, you know, FanFest was FanFest. They don't do the big release anymore, so I wasn't really expecting any kind of huge bombshells. Overall, I was pretty pleased with what we got.
You two were at FanFest, right?
No.
I was not, no. Not this year.
So none of us was.
Our entire panel was not at FanFest.
Wasn't Ian at FanFest?
He was, but he is not here.
Yeah, we'll get his FanFest post-autopsy thing. It'll have to be next episode, which we're recording the 30th. The 30th, yeah. Also a WWE pay-per-view, so if you enjoyed our WrestleMania breakdown from the previous episode, you will get another shot.
Not again.
No, it's going to be much, much shittier. We're probably not going to talk about it. But we do have, at the end of the show, the WrestleMania recap. How good were we at predicting the show? Spoiler alert, not great. Okay. There was one huge announcement that really caught my attention. A brand new kind of PvE content that is unlike anything Eve has ever seen before. And while it will still use the same lock and firing mechanics as regular PvE content, the context, setup, and difficulty level are beyond anything we've seen so far. I'm talking about the Blood Raiders shipyard site. This is an NPC citadel. There is only one of them at any one point in time. When it blows up, it will respawn elsewhere. The Blood Raiders send out haulers to gather material, and presumably they have mining fleets as well, and then the haulers go to get the ore from the mining fleets, and they will travel through gates to get back home. And if you manage to find the system where they're at and probe these things down, they won't show up on any scans, no overview. You gotta use probes to get it. And if you can find it, the Blood Raider shipyard is a fucking beast. It will dynamically intuit what fleet you bring, what ships, how many, what guns they're fit with, and it will spit counters at you over and over and over and over again, and the counters will be smart enough to do things like warp on top of your sniper fleet, bubble you, potentially even use micro jump drives to separate parts of your fleet from the rest of your fleet. Like the little micro jump drive destroyers. That's not coming out at release, but they were not coming out at release. Let's put it like that. And then, as far as I understand, essentially an endless wave of these guys. And you have to kill the fleet, survive, and destroy the Citadel itself. And oh, by the way, the Citadel will shoot at you. And newts and guns and disruptors, the whole nine yards.
This is a Sotio, so not quite the defense level of a Keepstar, but it is the extra large variation of the engineering complex line, so not
is that,
to be overlooked by any means.
Is that considered more than a Fortizar, or is a Fortizar still technically more firepower?
Should be, yeah.
I would consider a Sotio, yeah, certainly stronger than a Fortizar.
Okay.
The Sotio stronger than Fuzza?
I'd have to double check the fittings and how the bonuses work out if it is, but in the back of my head, that's what it's like. It seems reasonable that the extra large, even of an engineering complex, would be stronger than the large of a... But then again, I don't know.
I do not know offhand either. I think it will come down to the fitting, because it'll have much more fitting to work with.
Well,
so it might be able to fit more stuff there.
Fewer fitting slots than their Citadel counterparts, so it'll be interesting, especially when you consider the defensive bonuses of the Fortizar itself compounding with that. Plus, Fortizars will typically come with defensive riggings, where the engineering complexes will have more industrial-focused rigs. So, it'll be interesting.
Unclear what the rigging breakdown of these NPC ones is going to be, but presumably it's going to be painful for you no matter what. And it's not just the Citadel itself, but also all the ships that it's going to be putting out at you.
And speaking of the ships that it's putting out, what drops after you kill it, Alec?
Faction supers.
Ooh.
And faction facts and a faction dread. Basically, the Sancha line of
Sancha?
Excuse me, Blood Raider line of caps. So you will have basically a Shimu and Balgorn bonuses on your capital ships now. That includes Faxes, that includes the Dreadnought, Titan, etc.
It's pretty cray. Very, very interesting things done with the fitting and the bonuses. I really liked the cleverness that they had when designing the Fax, changing the CPU cost for the Nosses and the power grid cost for the remote armor repairs, if I recall correctly. Just some very clever design and balance there. to ensure that we can't have just nuding faxes jumping around everywhere. It's super interesting. I would highly recommend watching whichever, was it game design panel or that they went in depth on the capitals. In any case, super clever things done. So if you're worried that they're going to be crazy overpowered, they're going to be powerful. But CCP has at least taken a few steps to prevent it going too crazy.
Yeah, I missed where that happened. Do you want to go into a little depth of how that's going to work? Because my understanding is this is basically a fax, which will be able to do fax things, and also still have some slots over for nuding.
Yeah, so it does have some slots left over, but the way that they set the bonuses on the ship, if I recall correctly, they're with roll bonuses, is they significantly reduce the power grid cost for remote repair modules. That means that you can fit the remote repair modules just fine and still have enough fitting room left over for your tank and things like that. But then instead of reducing any power grid costs for the NOSes, they reduce the CPU cost. So if you have the fit in whatever balance they consider to be appropriate, then you should have enough fittings to get it. But if you are using a full NOS fit, then you're not going to have enough power grid, for example. Or if you're trying to use perhaps a full rep fit, you're going to be running short on CPU.
Things I like see. That. Yeah, clever.
That's indeed clever.
And they have confirmed that these will continue to drain even if you yourself are out of cap. So we'll have that roll bonus of those ships.
Indeed.
NOSes will continue to work even if you're, regardless of your capacitor level.
Yeah, which matches up with the other blood raiders. So
it's interesting. I'm really interested to see where the price point of these things is going to end up, because the limitation of there's only one of these structures in space in all of New Eden ever at one point in time, plus how difficult it looks like it's going to be to take them out, and the fact that it's region locked. These Blood Raider Sotios will only appear within Delve, if I recall correctly, generically Blood Raider space, perhaps even just NPC space. That hasn't been confirmed yet. I'm not sure if CCP knows for sure themselves. But all of those limitations may mean that they're going to be relatively expensive, despite the fact that CCP has significantly lowered the material cost for building them. You may recall that their Serpentis capitals, when they came out, they're available via LP stores, so they're relatively easier to get as far as the number of people involved in the operation, but the build cost is hilariously large, leading to massive costs for the ships themselves. Like 30 to 40 billion was the number thrown out for the cost of the Dread when they first came out, if I recall correctly. CCP has significantly reduced the build cost here such that it's only like 50% greater than the standard capital and super capital build costs, but the difficulty in acquiring these things will be the main attributor to the cost, I think.
Yeah, and that difficulty is going to be pretty extreme from the sound of it. Even regardless of the rarity, I think even if you find them, it's going to take pretty much an alliance level, if not coalition level op, to take it down.
I guess that will be the question. I mean, who will run those? If it's going to be something like an incursion group, I mean, that could happen, that there is some group farming to do that, to farm them.
Well,
that could easily go to market then.
So.
Yeah, that's the problem. But
it'll be interesting.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if an alliance is farming, then I guess they will keep them for themselves, so there will be pretty much no market for this.
Well, that's an interesting question, because that's how the original Titans were for the longest time. The groups that could make Titans and supercarriers, they really concentrated them, and it was considered a huge betrayal if you sold, outside of the alliance. Nowadays, it's much more common and the proliferation has taken over. But with these being very much region-locked, will the alliances in these regions hold on to them much more tightly? Or will they sell them for the massive amount of money? And, that's an interesting decision for them to have to make. Then there's the other end of that, which is, will the alliances that continue to sit there get the shit kicked out of them by alliances that are more interested in farming said material than they are?
Indeed. And
will Pandemic Legion basically go south for this, I think, is the question. PLNNC.
A couple of points on that, which we failed to mention in our quick overview of the mechanics, are number one, in finding these things, we mentioned that you have to combat scan down the haulers for the Blood Raider mining ships. But once you find those, once you find the structure, it's still cloaked, quote unquote, I believe is the term that CCP used, which means nobody else knows where it is except for you and anybody you share your bookmark with. However, once you do the initial reinforcement cycle, and although this is a citadel, this is a Sotio, because it is not a part of the, what are they called? I forget the corporation name. The people who upwell structures, because it's not a part of the upwell structure network, they only have two reinforcement cycles, the shield and the hull. But as soon as you reinforce it for the shield timer, 24 hours later, if I recall correctly, it comes out for hull and is ready to be killed. But as soon as that first reinforcement goes through, then supposedly everyone can see it. I'm not entirely positive on the mechanics of that, whether it shows up in your journal like an incursion of some sort, or it will be visible in some other method. But it'll be interesting to see the sort of fights that occur around these things as they get the initial reinforcement happening, and then perhaps there's going to be a rush for entities to move over in order to perhaps contest the capture of them and get a blueprint for themselves, or merely to get some good fights and kill the people trying to farm the structures.
And for those of you curious which alliances currently hold Blood Raider space, we have Goonswarm Federation, the Bastion, Red Alliance, Dream Fleet, and the Voltician Cult. Or the Volition Cult. Volt, basically. I could name at least one of those alliances that's probably going to be losing their space in the next 6 months. Goodbye, Volt. It was nice knowing you. Red Alliance and Dream Fleet, also probably not long for this world. I think Goonswarm and Bastion will probably be okay.
Probably, yeah. It could be really interesting to see those third parties going on there.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad for them. I mean, I could easily see BL and NC Dot going, hey, we want that shit. Let's go take some space down there and lock a Goonswarm out of it. So we could see the whole repeat of the previous year's war toward the end of the year.
Well, it'll be.
I mean, we'll see. Because it could be wrong, but there's so many people that hate Goonswarm in this game. I have a very difficult time believing that they will be allowed to maintain control over such a powerful asset, a powerful money-making asset, a powerful strategic asset, and not have anyone challenge for it. Whether they'll win or not, you know, who knows, but I don't think it's just going to let stand. I think it'll either be before the patch or shortly after.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see. I mean, it's another point where naturally fights and war can happen without the players declaring it for themselves, but just because the assets are there.
Oh, conflict driver.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, speaking of that point, if I recall correctly, I haven't seen the video footage myself, but there was a point made very explicitly by CCP that they're viewing Eve not so much as a sandbox anymore, but more of a playground. And the play on the analogy there is it's less of the players do everything themselves, and it's just all based on what the players do, but more there is an environment with which the players can interact, and certainly there is a huge amount of space for emergent gameplay, but it's not quite so completely reliant on it. Has anybody seen the footage of that, can go a little bit more in depth, or have some thoughts on that particular point?
I have not seen said footage.
No, same here.
I don't know if I necessarily like the sound of it. I think Eve is a sandbox game, but I would like to see less of a playground and more of what got me excited was during the talk about the shipyard. They talked about Eve in terms of being a living, breathing open world where the tools that they were using to build the shipyard thing could be used to, for instance, simulate real, regular supply convoys between the empires and the different corporations. You actually see these ships flying around. You could interact with them if you wanted to. Having the world feel alive in that way, where you see all this background commerce and military conflict happening all around you, which you can either engage with or ignore with, and engage on which side of which, whatever you choose. But to me, a playground is, there are tools here that are static, and this is where you come to play. You come in, and here are the limited number of things you can do, and those things don't change, and they can only let you do one specific thing, can only swing on the swings. Seesaw is only for seesawing. And I don't think that's quite the Eve experience that's been compelling for me.
Well, speaking of changes, one final thing. It's not in our show notes, but I thought I'd mention it because of Alexiev Card's slip of the lip when we first started talking about the new Blood Raider capitals. Implant sets. CCP talked about them at the previous FanFest. We saw the first new set come out, the Asclepians. They bonus to armor repair. They're the secondary set for the Serpentis. And one big change is coming. The Slave Implants. They currently drop from Sansha's Nation, which is a bit odd because Slave Implants bonus your armor HP, but Sansha's Nation are notably a shield plus lasers faction as of late. And CCP has announced that they're going to be changing that. The Slave Implants will now be shield, and there will be the new implants, which are the secondary for the Blood Raiders, which bonus your armor HP. Or is it the primary for the Blood Raiders bonus your armor HP, and capacitor is their secondary? One of the two. In any case, it's going to be a change as far as Sansha's dropping the new bonus to the shield HP and slaves being transitioned over to Blood Raiders.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty innocuous change. It'll be some speculation early on, but those prices will stabilize. I think the fact that slaves for shields now exists is the bigger change. Yeah. That's like the headline buried in there.
Pretty much, yeah.
I could see that definitely impacting the low-sec meta, especially. You know, the slaves have been one of the reasons why armor has really come and become one of the dominant things. And if you find people that fly shield in low-sec, but you know, a lot of folks still have that armor doctrine. Now I think you'll see people that love to fly the Max and the Rattlesnake shield style will probably go all in on those.
Certainly that, and the fact that CCP has mentioned that they're taking a good hard look at the reliance of Citadels on their neuting power, specifically the Void Bombs, which are also impactful on fights which have to take place, virtually requiring attackers to have a passive armor tank and guns which do not require capacitor to fire, basically shuffling them into an armor mercurial doctrine. So that, if it does get changed, if it does get dialed back a bit in addition to the introduction of shield slaves, will certainly be interesting. Quite the shakeup of the meta.
Mm-hmm. It's exciting times. And probably not the only shakeup we're going to see. And finally, I want to talk a little bit about Goons versus Circle of Test heating up. And Yukiko would love your first-hand account of this. Goons have been much more active attacking Circle of Two and Test lately. Pushing in, killing caps, getting their caps killed, attacking citadels and such. In particular, there was a big fight this past weekend over one of the citadels, I believe, that Circle of Two owned. You can check me on that. But Yukiko, take it away. What is going on in the south right now? Is this a big push from Goonswarm? Is this border skirmishing? What's happening?
I mean, right now I feel it's really just skirmishing. Modifieds than the push, but that has to be seen. I don't really feel a big push right now, but it's certainly interesting to see what they try to drop for just the first time of Forza. So this big fight was basically next door from our home system, and it's a CO2 Forza that was attacked.
What did they bring? What did you bring? And how did the fight shake out?
Yeah, we had to fight against a huge amount of carriers. I don't recall the exact numbers, but it was
huge. It was huge.
Let's say around 100 carriers. So pretty nicely shaped up. Some subcaps. We had Feroxes on field from Goons, and we had a bunch of fleets up there. We had a Nightmare fleet out on field. With Brave had a Maelstrom fleet with Faxes. There were Max on field, so there was quite a lot going on. At the prime, we had about 2,300 people, so that was quite interesting. Obviously, tie-dye was bad, and
but playable?
It was, well, I mean, partly playable, let's say.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, it became better at some point, but it was still, like, the prime of the fight was pretty horrible, actually. It was really a good fight. At first, it was more like a standoff. Timer was ticking down. Carriers didn't attack, really. We just sat at Forza. And then at some point, they sent the fighters in, and we had to decide to either go in or let the timer pass. And we went in the last couple of minutes of the timer, and it was a pretty nice fight. In the end, CO2 bought some super sin to wipe whatever carriers was left on field, but it was a really nice fight going on there on many levels, like subcaps and then the caps later.
Mm-hmm. And they saved the Citadel, as I recall.
Yeah. It was
just barely.
Yeah, just barely. But it worked. So that was cool.
Awesome. We'll definitely bring you more on that story as it develops, as well as Yin's perspective on the politics of the South on the next episode. Now we've got our region descriptions, and if you haven't joined us before, this is where we read the old region descriptions of EVE Online with a bit of a dramatic flair. Today we've got Artemis taking Stain, myself talking about Syndicate, and Yukiko talking about Teenal. Oh, sorry, I skipped host highlights. Well, we'll do region descriptions first, since we're here. Artemis, okay. Why don't you take it away?
Stain. So long as a single citizen of my nation survives, my dream lives on.
Especially helps that those citizens seem to respawn pretty regularly after you kill them.
Pretty good.
Sandy. Syndicate. A den of thieves, scoundrels, bandits, black market dealers, gamblers, pimps, and prostitutes. All in all, a nice place for a holiday. A named Galenti senator.
Can confirm it is a fantastic place for a holiday.
Get it, son. Get it.
But it's pretty expensive, if I'm rather hurt.
Yeah, that depends on what you're flying.
Depends on what you pick up.
I see. Well, let's...
All right, Yukiko, let's have you do Teenal.
There we go. Teenal. Teenal has long been a refuge for those wishing to stray far away from the state for one reason or another. The journey there is perilous due to the intervening Garistus territories, but that remains a major element of its appeal. And many pioneers, hermits, and less reputable travelers have risked everything to travel to this quiet backwater and make it their home. Several Kaldari mystics have claimed that Teenal is the place that one should travel to in order to come face to face with the Starsmith, although whether this is in reference to the view into space from its outmost systems, or the likely outcome of trying to negotiate the dangers of the route, has never been made clear.
Excellent. I had to giggle at your purlieus.
Yeah, rip. That was...
rip! No, that was great, dude. Nice. All right, let's talk host highlights. I'm crushing it on the market right now. I'm very pleased. I am not able to deploy as much money into the market as I want. I have actually hit the limit of my trade orders because I've been having so much fun buying and selling stuff into Dixie. To the point where I forgot that you need one spare sell order to sell anything to an instant sell order. Which was kind of annoying. So I'm still figuring out how I'm going to balance my trading with my normal everyday selling stuff needs with my industrial production stuff and how that's all going to work in terms of how much money I'm putting in and how many trade slots I associate from one to the other. But it's interesting, and I'm enjoying the challenge, and I'm finding great percentage wins in the market, which is nice. You know, people selling to me very low, and then I resell it for very high. Very, very, very interesting experiment. I'm kind of really glad that I took that step and got more into this part of the game, because I found that I actually enjoy it quite a bit.
An interesting note there. It sounds to me like you're trading almost exclusively in directly the main trade hub station of Dodixie and not a New Eden trading company for Dazar or Keepstar somewhere.
Well, I've tried to trade in Bazgaran, which is also in the region. However, the volume just isn't there. And some of the prices are not as good. So I've tried to, you know, put some goods for sale in Bazgaran, but, you know, they're just not moving off the shelf, and people definitely aren't looking to sell goods there. And I don't want to do a lot of hauling. So if I start the thing in Dodixie and set it to, like, however many jumps to Dixie away from Bazgaran, I think it's about 6, I would still have to pick up things from 6 jumps anywhere around Dodixie. And that's more back and forth than I really want to spend my time with. So I've decided to pretty much focus on Dodixie and then just put a couple things that I think the Bazgaran NETC community would really appreciate, like mobile warp disruption bubbles, and or not disruption bubbles, mobile cyno inhibitors and ammo, things like that.
Speaking of that, buy order range, are you utilizing any no-tax Fortizars in the nearby system of Botane or something like that?
I am occasionally utilizing Botane. The issue is I enjoy the buying and selling in the market, and I enjoy the production. I still do not enjoy the hauling aspect of it. So I don't want to spend a lot of time going back and forth between systems, which has limited my use of the no-tax trade hubs. However, there have been a couple times where I've put articles for sale up there. But it hasn't been very frequent, to be honest. Despite the percentage penalty for using the NPC station, the volume there, and the convenience of being able to do all the buying and selling in one place sort of makes that worthwhile for me.
Interesting insights.
Indeed.
Artemis, your highlights.
My host highlight for this Declarations of War podcast comes from a few days ago. I can't remember when it was exactly because I was quite tired at the time. I just felt like, you know, going out and blowing up some spaceships. I didn't really care if I blew up somebody else's spaceship or if my spaceship blew up. So I did what anybody does. I grabbed a T1 cruiser and I went roaming in Syndicate. And in this particular instance, I went down to the southeast of Syndicate and found a Rorqual in an ice anom and tackled it like you do in a T1 cruiser. And just tried to see what I could do. There were a couple of other ships on field. I made the decision to tackle the Rorqual as it was out of industrial core mode as I landed, rather than tackle the what is it called? Procure, which was also on field at the time. Probably the wrong decision, as it meant that I didn't get a kill mail at the end of this story, but I think it made things a little bit more interesting. I was really after the kill mails on the excavator drones, if I'm being honest with you. I was focused more on locking them up and trying to get those billionist kill mails than locking up anything else. Unfortunately, I didn't catch them. held on to the Rorqual for a few minutes, and to their credit, the locals, the owners of the Rorqual, sent out a 5 or 6 man T1 cruiser fleet to fight me off, and I stayed on grid until I died, nearly killed a Caracal. I think I was able to break the tank of another Vexer. I was flying a Vexer, by the way. Flying in Syndicate, sort of expected to get blobbed, to be honest. And so I was in a triple rep Vexer. It's designed to basically tank and hopefully kill something before you die to the mass of people incoming. But it did not turn out that way. I ended up dying at the end, but it was fun. And highly recommended. Go out, tackle a Rorqual in a Tech 1 cruiser and just see what happens.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
That does sound like a lot of fun. Yukiko, what was your highlight?
I mean, on Friday I sat in a fax in 10% tie-dye. That was somewhat fun, let's say. But actually, I'm still amazed to be on CSM and trying to cope with all this and joining new chat channels and stuff almost on a daily basis. So that is pretty much the highlight right now.
All right. And of course, we had our WrestleMania episode recently. And for those of you who are interested, how did we do with our WrestleMania predictions? Not too good, as it turned out. So we'll start at the bottom. The Raw Tag Team Championship Triple Threat Ladder Match. We had largely predicted that the champions would retain. I think one of us went with Enzo and Big Cass. However, it was a surprise entrance situation, and the Hardy Boys made their WWE returns and won the titles. No way any of us could have seen that coming, but I'm very happy that the Hardys are now back and the champ. Now, speaking of singular champs, Alexa Bliss, we all universally predicted would come out on top unless there was a surprise return entrant. Now, there was no surprise return entrant, but she did lose, which I find very strange. She lost to Naomi, who had won the title from her about a month before and then had to forfeit it due to injury, but came back early in recovery. This is the kind of booking which drives me up a goddamn wall. If you're champion, okay, you loses the title, that person gets hurt. If that person is going to be back by the next pay-per-view, just keep the belt on them and have some build. And then instead of this, she's defending against every female superstar who could compete, you just actually have the one-on-one title match with all the heat on it, with the good guy and the villain that injured her, and actually have them just fight. Like, what the fuck? So, that didn't happen. Naomi won. Again. And the title changed hands 2 times in a month. For no fucking reason. International Championship match. I think Yin predicted Dean Ambrose would win. Correct. I was wrong. Baron Corbin did not take the W.
Both Jin and I realized that never take a fight against a guy named Ambrose.
It turned out to be excellent advice. For the Raw Women's Championship Fatal 4-Way, Bayley defended. Hooray! I predicted this would be the case, and it was. It didn't shake out exactly how I thought it was going to play out in my head, but the end result was the same. SmackDown Live, I don't think anyone in our podcast or in the world generally thought that Shane McMahon would somehow beat AJ Styles unless there was some kind of interference angle, which there was not. He came out on top. Likewise, Seth Rollins beat Triple H with a pedigree. Noteworthy. We all knew John Cena and Nikki Bella would beat Miz and Maryse, so the action was whether or not there would be a proposal from John Cena at the end of the at the end of the match, and there was. They are now engaged to be married. The Undertaker versus Roman Reigns. I think Jin took the Undertaker, and I took Roman Reigns against the feelings in my heart, because I felt like it might be Undertaker's last match, and they would have him go out to put Roman over. It was sort of my worst fear, and it was a worst fear that came true. Roman Reigns did defeat the Undertaker. In fact, they went on last, which makes sense, because it was Taker's retirement match. That's just what you do. The match itself was pretty good, actually, but I'm not feeling what they're doing with Roman Reigns. I really wish they would not feed him every good thing that the WWE has going for it to try to get him more popular. It's like a hamburger hill of charisma. Universal Championship match, Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar wins. I don't think any of us saw any differences there. We didn't talk about, but was relevant, the United States Championship match, Chris Jericho versus his former best friend Kevin Owens after Kevin Owens betrayed him most cruelly at the Festival of Friendship.
Wow.
Yes, I know. It was heartbreaking to watch, as it was heartbreaking that Kevin Owens' villainy was rewarded by him defeating Chris Jericho for the title, taking everything from Chris, not only his best friend, but his championship as well. Awful. And finally, Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton, which, if you're paying attention to the WWE at all, you should know that the winner of the Royal Rumble headlines WrestleMania. That's supposed to be how it is. Unfortunately, both of them went on before Goldberg and Lesnar and Roman Reigns and Undertaker. So we got the match, and I'm kind of glad that they didn't headline it, because it was terrible. With all the build and the amazing setup, not amazing setup, actually, the setup was pretty bad, but they did put a lot of effort into building it, and they had Bray Wyatt win his first championship not just a month before Randy Orton, who's had many, many titles. They still had Randy Orton beat Bray Wyatt, and Bray Wyatt was doing all this goofy shit with a projector to, like, put images of worms and maggots and stuff onto the ring. It was goofy as fuck. And equally goofy, the decision to have Bray lose his title at WrestleMania a month after he won it. What the hell? So all in all, a pretty watchable pay-per-view. I enjoyed the undercard very much. I enjoyed Goldberg versus Brock. I did not enjoy Taker Reigns. Did not enjoy Wyatt Orton. And, yeah, those are my feelings. Any closing thoughts, Artemis?
You know, things came out pretty okay, in my opinion.
There we go.
The only name in the last 10 minutes that I heard before was The Undertaker from the 80s, but that's about it.
We'll get Yin's thoughts on how things shake out on the next show. I'm sure he'll be very shocked at some of the results. And some pleased at some of the other ones. You guys are right on the Dean Ambrose thing. I could not have been more wrong. But they had him lose in a very classy way. Baron Corbin, he looked strong. He looked strong even though he got beat. So that's how you want to play it. That's it, guys. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in this show's poll and leave a comment on the episode. Just a reminder, the Capitalist Army is recruiting. That is my corp. We can use a few good capitalists. Join the Capitalist chat and game for more info. It is Capitalist Space Chat. Wherever you are, good hunting, listeners.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
way you look, you see it and want it, you gotta believe you can get it. Open your eyes and see your dreams and the distance from all hope and wishing. We are the privilege. Through faith, all things are possible. And with the power inside, ain't no stopping you. We won't hesitate to fight for a better day until we inevitably claim our victory. No more time for depression and stress. Prepare despair with the power of blessing. No fear in here, we use faith as our weapon for the new day, new way with no half. Stop looking for who we are gonna be. Let it go, we've got